Welcome to 321 Go the Podcast. I'm John Pelkey.
And I'm Carissa Galloway, and we're bringing you stories from start to finish to keep the everyday athlete motivated to keep moving towards the next finish.
All right, Carissa, today we're very, very excited to have a woman who motivates countless athletes and weekend warriors every single day. She's a mom, an amazing runner, finished fourth at the British Olympic Marathon Trials for the 2020 Olympic team, but you probably know her best as an inspiring Peloton instructor. It's Bex Gentry.
I mean, John, how excited are we to have Bex join us? Because we inspire people like 4 to 6 times a year, but she does it every single day. She's an amazing human. I met her at the Olympic Trials here in February, and she just was so warm, so kind, and to everybody, be it an announcer, somebody on the street, always taking time to give love for her fans. She recently got her 6th star from the Abbott World Majors by running the Tokyo Marathon, and that's a big deal to get all 6 of those stars. Takes a lot of dedication, 6 marathons all over the world. So we chat with her about her race in Tokyo, her, as she calls it, grow back after having baby T, and of course we talk about Peloton. In Healthier You, we talk about getting sugar in on your run, and we answer a listener question about nerves. Thank you guys so much for listening. Hit that subscribe button or add us to your library. That's truly the kindest thing you can do. Thank you for all the kind words after springtime surprise. We love seeing you at the finish line too. If you really want to keep 321 Go going, then become a supporter. And shout out to our newest supporter. It is Anne-Marie. Woo woo, Anne-Marie. You can become a supporter following the link in the show notes. Let's do this.
All right, Carissa, you're just back from Ironman, Texas, where apparently you had quite the busy weekend. I know you wrote out the stuff you did, but I've been following you. Press conference, welcoming ceremony, announced the race, reporting for the broadcast. I mean, I'm sure you made out fairly well financially, but money per hour spent was probably not that great. How was it out there?
That's funny. We actually had 3 announcers. Usually we only have 2. So having 3 was like a dream. And so shout out to Tony and Tom, because they actually did, I would call it the harder work. Like, they got to transition first. It's just that talking. Like, you, when you get to the start of a race that's not Disney, it's just that hour, 2 hours of the bathrooms are here, the race starts here. So I actually got to do the fun stuff, which you would like too. Like, I got to call in the pros for the swim start, wearing bib wearing bib number 1, your 2023 champion. Like, we like that kind of stuff. So I actually did, I think I made out better because I got to do the fun stuff. I got to Skype in on the live broadcast, which was fun. We haven't done that before. So that kind of broke up my day a little bit and allowed me to kind of put on a different hat, if you will. But the pros were fun. The Ironman Pro Series is new this year, so they're putting a lot of focus on coverage for that and trying to tell some of the stories of the pros, which I think is important. The woman who won, her name is Kat Matthews. She won last year as well, but prior to last year's win, she had a horrific bike accident where when she hit the ground, people training with her thought she was dead. There was so much blood coming out of her head, essentially. So her comeback was fantastic. A lot of other great pro stories there. Patrick Lange, he's from Germany, so it looks like Lange, but we're supposed to say Lange, you know? He is a 2-time Ironman world champion. He came in 2nd, and I had not gotten to know him before, but such a good human, like a great sportsmanship with all the other athletes. After the race, they were waiting to do our live broadcast interviews, and he was just sitting in a chair, looked genuinely like he was going to vomit, but people kept coming up to him and asking for pictures. So he would like sit up, you know, and engage with them and then go right back down to feeling terrible. And I was like, what a nice guy, right? Like, you finished, imagine you finishing the race and people being like, John. And you'd be like, no. And you did
go away.
You did 6.2 miles and he did 140.6 and ran up 2:35 marathon at the end of an Ironman, which was not the fastest marathon of the day.
They're just a different breed, the people that can do that on that level. But I love the fact that, you know, he's also realizes he's an ambassador and promoting a sport that, while gaining in popularity, still needs more viewers, more eyes on it, more people interested in it.
Yeah.
And I think two things from what you said, the storytelling, the back storytelling is imperative for something like that, because Wide World of Sports, which I grew up with, told us that. Who cares about ice skating barrel jumping? Well, you do when you find out, you know, the guy who finished second last year adopted 9 kids and, flies his own plane. And the other thing is, you know, just recognizing that as a stellar athlete in that you kind of have to be there. You can't be the aloof wide receiver who doesn't want to talk to the press.
You're not getting millions of dollars. Part of that is just sort of that quality. And then we had another athlete that I'm a huge fan of. His name is Matthew Marquardt. He is a full-time medical student and a pro triathlete. And he's just a really smart, focused guy. He was leading the whole race. It was going to be his first win. And then on the run, he just hit a wall and he starts walking. And then he runs a little bit and you see him see his girlfriend and his mom. And I think he's like maybe crying. He's like hugging them. And then he's just walking. And so the coverage, we've talked about this before, there's only one camera. So the camera is on Tomas, the guy who went on to be the first Mexican to win an Ironman. And so I don't know where Matthew is, and I just assume he'd quit or whatever. This guy came in fourth. He hit a wall of walls. I don't know how he kept going, but it was strong enough to finish fourth. And so he's just a super inspiring athlete. He wants to work in cancer research and be a cancer surgeon. You know, of course, like a cancer neurosurgeon. That's like a totally like not ridiculously hard job to do while you're training for Ironman. But anyway.
I'm sure.
He just kept going.
Requires a couple hours of the day.
Right? And so those stories there. And the other thing I want to say about the race itself is the bike course is essentially an out and back 112 miles on a toll road. So one, not very scenic, but the wind was, John, awful. Like 30 to 35 mile an hour gust. So half the way they had this headwind that they just said was horrific. And what I heard from a lot of the pros that I think it's important to pass on to our athletes is that everyone I talked to said they had to find a mantra and just repeat it over and over and over and over. So one of them was like, the wind won't beat me. The wind won't beat me. The wind won't beat me. Beat me. Like strong and fluid, strong and fluid. So take that, you guys, into your next sort of long run or your long race. When you do hit that wall of walls, it's really just a bunch of words, you know, whatever that needs to be. But have those mantras in your back pocket because they work.
Yeah, and that had to hurt too, for because a lot of times what helps, at least that people have talked to me who know a lot more about it than me, but it's something I do as well, is looking at a signpost down the line, whatever it is, that tree, that let me get there. Yeah. And then you get there and you go, okay, I was able to get here, so let me get to the next thing. But you're on a toll road in Texas. When I get to that I don't know, turnaround for official cars only.
Yeah, which the turnaround is like, there's like one of those. Yeah. Yeah. And I know the race.
That's tough.
Yeah, it was a really tough. It seems like an easy bike, right? Like flat. Sometimes flat races are harder because when you go up and down, you use different muscles. You get the up and then you get the down. When it's flat.
You will coast. Yeah, you definitely want to have that little down. Save the legs.
No coasting.
Again, different breed of people who do that. And that is very inspiring. You know, nothing to take nothing away from anybody who finished first, second, or third. That fourth place finish may be the story of the race.
It is. And he'll get that first win. And I hope I'll be there to see it.
Great stuff. All right. You want me to ask you this question, and I'm a little frightened because I don't know the answer to it. Any animal encounters out there in Texas?
Yes, John. Yes. So I did put the pros in the water. When the cannon went off the first time, this beautiful crane like took off. It was real cute. But that's not the animal I'm talking about. So I walked to the swim exit, and we're there probably 20 minutes before the pros are going to get there. And I see the volunteers. So they swam in a canal. That's rather shallow. Because it's a canal and it's concrete, when the ducks or such use the restroom, it's just chilling there. So that's one thing to talk about. But we're waiting, and the guy goes,
definitely put, by
yeah,
the way. Definitely
I just, put. Just meh. The volunteers are in the stairs. So it's a staircase they're going to come out. And I get there, and the volunteers are in the stairs, and this guy goes, wait, sir, let me get that snake off the stair for you. So takes the snake, grabs it, throws it. Grabs about five others, throws them out back into the canal. Well, what do you think they do? They come back.
Right.
So I'm standing there and these snakes are just coming back towards where these people are standing in the water, where they are going to be for the next probably hours to help the athletes out. And so they're kind of like hitting it with water. Well, that just makes the snakes mad. Yeah. So then they're coming, like they're going to bite. We don't pay volunteers. There's not enough money in the world to pay me to stand in stairs where there are snakes for hours.
Sorry, event comes to end. That's the next morning in the paper, if I'm running it, event ends, not just prematurely, but before it even begins at that point.
Announcer refuses to announce. So I was like, spiders, I'm okay. It's something about the way snakes move that just does not.
Yeah, I don't have an inordinate fear of snakes, but if you're surprised by a snake, that's a kind of a difficult thing to deal with.
Well,
because to your point, the way they move.
I didn't know because it's just a concrete wall and the water level's like 2 inches down. And I'm like right here on the water. Like, are they going to come out? Because they could get out.
Well,
anyway,
I did spend an inordinate amount of time on TikTok watching an alligator climb out of about a 6-foot iron fence in South Florida. So I'm not putting anything past the snakes.
You know, honestly, I take the alligator off land
than
the snake.
Event does not happen. Yeah. That's the headline.
So people are like, Carissa, why don't you do Iron Man? Step one, snakes. Otherwise, great event. Happy to be back, though, heading to Indianapolis tomorrow when you guys hear this for the Festival 500 Indy Mini. Going to be a great race there. I already know there's a lot of Run Disney friends that are going to be in the crowd, so excited for them. But you, John, you're excited. You have your Stones shirt on. Why are you
I have my Keith Richards. It's a photograph of Keith Richards from the 1975 tour, I believe. It's a very attractive shirt. That fits me poorly, but I love it because, as you know, huge Rolling Stones fan. I've actually had people talk to me about that at races. Huge Rolling Stones fan. First saw them in 1981. Have gone to almost every tour since then. I think every tour since then here in Florida. And tickets came around this time. And you know, Carissa, concert tickets have the price has increased, as you know.
I
get it.
Crazy.
Artists don't make as much money selling albums. I completely understand. Yeah. I'm pro artist making money, though the fees and stuff on Ticketmaster, another story for another time. But my very good friend, David Lowe, who is an orthodontist in the Central Florida area and a friend of mine from theater, a talented actor and singer as well. He had 4 tickets for the floor for himself, his lovely wife, and their 2 children. Okay. Now, when he got those tickets, he was actually in line. He had the 2 computer thing going and was in line for another ticket and said, hey, I don't know if you're in the lobby yet, but I'm almost there. When you want me to get you 4 tickets? And then he told me what they cost. And I didn't really have $3,000 to drop or whatever it was around that. So I said, no, you know what? Not my year. And at the time he said, well, my daughter may choose not to come back. His son and daughter go to college in Colorado. She may be staying out there for the summer. You know, she's not that excited about seeing the Stones, you know, who are these 105-year-old guys, she's asking. So there's a possibility you could get a seat. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's great. Don't never ask again. It would be rude. Just, you know, fingers crossed, Marley decides to stay out at Colorado College. Subsequently, I'm exchanging some information with David online. I don't even remember what we were talking about. And he goes, oh, by the way, somebody offered my wife tickets to see James Taylor at Red Rocks the same weekend as the Stones. And she's like, I don't think I'm going to feel like going to the concert, so you can give my ticket away. And guess who gets that phenomenal seat for the Stones Hackney Diamonds Tour here in Orlando, keeping my streak alive of every tour since Tattoo U.
That's exciting for you.
It's very exciting for me because now when you buy concert tickets, because I have concert tickets to see Aerosmith in Orlando, but it's next February.
Yeah.
And when you buy tickets now, it's usually like an 8-month wait. I'm going to be there in like a month and 2 days. It's June 3rd. So very excited.
All
so
Stones.
Thank you, David Lowe. Lowe Orthodontics.
Yeah.
If you're over there on the coast, please.
Well, you'll have
help
to.
Me
we
pay
we
for
are
my ticket.
Holding our breath, waiting for a recap. And you finished your 10K to Tumbling Dice. That's a Stone song.
Yeah. See, there it is. So people know. Big deal. Big deal. Far too many people, by the way, sharing that video online.
Aww, I see lots of Pelkey Run Club hats. I saw a race maybe out in Ohio. If I see one in Indianapolis, I'm going to lose it. Like, I'm going to be like, ah!
I've seen them all over the place. The hat travels much better than I do.
I'm going to be really excited to see one out in the wild for real. A quick sidebar. I can finally speak today because after Iron Man, I did a healthier you chat and it was like,
so
back, like springtime and then Iron Man. So hopefully it holds up.
But in a way, it lets people know who think our job is just nothing but giggles and fun and yep. pixie dust. There is at a point, you do get to be like, okay, I've announced for seven days out of eight. I can't talk now.
It takes a toll. Now, that Stones concert for you is going to come up quickly because you are a traveling man. That's not a Stones song, I don't think.
No, Traveling Band is a Creedence Clearwater Revival song. So
not the same.
All right, here, yes. This weekend, very excited. My wife and I are traveling to New Hampshire, and we are officiating the wedding of our niece.
I love
our niece Crystal and her husband to be Fernando are getting married. Beautiful area up in the mountains of New Hampshire. It's going to be in the low 60s, going to be 40s at night. So I'm going to get a little cool weather prior to the dog days. And we're going to perform their Star Wars Avengers themed wedding.
That's right. This is how we got to Jabba the Hutt on race day. But I didn't know there was an Avengers crossover. And I got to say, I think that's too much. You can't have
What? I had to write the wedding ceremony. Because I'm the official officiant. I'm the one who can legally perform wedding ceremonies. But Joe and I are both going to do, you know, the thing. And so I had to kind of write the script for it. We didn't make it overly May the 4th-y because they're getting married on May the 4th, people. May the 4th be with you, you know.
My mom and Guy's wedding anniversary, too.
Yep. So probably Guy and your mom not doing it for that reason, but they did. Okay, fair enough. A discussion for another day. So I didn't put too many references in there. I found some really lovely quotes, surprisingly most from Yoda, that it could pop in there and some other things. I kept it at a little bit of a minimum, but it is indeed a Star Wars-themed wedding with yours truly as officiant.
I love that. No.
One and Jody's 1A.
No costumes.
No costumes, though. There was a color palette. We were presented with a color palette.
I'm not mad at that.
Nope. And part of one of the colors was black, obviously, for men's stuff. And I possess an all-black suit, a really nice one that I got from doing a Spectrum commercial, and they gave me the wardrobe afterwards. Yeah. So I picked up a new shirt and tie, which is always very exciting for a bit of a dandy like me. Got to go tie and shirt shopping. You don't really have to do that a lot in Florida, people. I don't know if you don't
live
here.
What color did you go with? A pattern or a color?
I've got a very small window pane pattern because it's an all-black suit, and I wanted to break that up a little bit. And then a very colorful muted tie that picks up some of the colors in the shirt and really sets off. And it's got kind of a cosmic look to it. That's good. It's kind of it would be like if you took a striped tie, a medium striped tie, and then you kind of blurred it out a little bit so the colors sort of run into each other. Right. Anyway, the sartorial explanations are not as good as they should be, but I think it's a good look. I'll get a picture, and we can put it on where people download the podcast, and they can vote on whether or not they like my shirt and tie combination.
Sounds good. I will say for Weston and I's wedding, and we had a small wedding in St. Croix, I asked that everyone wear solid colors because I'd seen pictures of like beach weddings, and then the one person in I wanted everybody to just be solid, and I didn't want any crazy patterns. Weston thought that was a little diva-ish, but...
No. I think that does make sense because you can get a lot too going on with patterns, but I just thought in an all-black suit, and it had the colors that I needed. With the just white shirt, it just feels too funeral-y to me.
Yeah.
No, so I wanted something that broke it up a little, and you're just showing the V, so I think it'll be fine. I don't think I will be a pariah at the wedding.
All right, you and I have cruises, but I think we can save that chat for a couple weeks. We've got about two more weeks before you and I will do our final
chat. We will talk
chat.
Before my DVC members Mediterranean cruise, which
you
comes up.
You might go before I go, I think, and then I go after
I will be
you.
Going. I think we're back from New Hampshire, and then we leave 10 days later.
So we'll talk about that next week. John, there's just one more thing I want to say before we dive into Bex, and it's about Taylor Swift.
Good. I'm excited.
So excited. Have you been listening to the Tortured Poets Department?
Yeah, I've been through. I've been
it's
through
good.
Everything a couple
get,
of times.
Lyrically, it's not upbeat, but lyrically, you got to get into some of it.
It's good storytelling.
There's a conspiracy theory floating around, and the only reason I'm saying it because if it's true, I want to get credit for saying it on the podcast that she is dropping another album on 5/3.
Wow. Okay.
Now, base of the conspiracy theory. I mean, these people, John, go deep, like way too deep. But that Fortnite was the first song of her album. And if you go a fortnight, where to May 3rd, which is a Friday. And then if you look at the Tortured Poets Department logo, it's a 3 in Roman numerals. So there is a rumor that there is another part coming out on Friday. If it's right, I just want a little bit of credit. But there's a lot of Easter. I mean, these people go deep. They're like, and then when she posted the picture, there were three cats in it. And on the next picture, she was in a frame and there were five sides to it. Like, it's too much. I'm going to say that. But I do. Well,
it's not new. Can I just say it's not new? And I have everybody Google, is Paul McCartney dead?
Okay.
And that's from 1966. Paul McCartney, supposedly there's a whole substructure of conspiracies about Paul McCartney died and was replaced by a lookalike and all these clues in the Beatles music and blah, 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 blah. And it's endlessly entertainment. And
but he's
it's a
not
whole
dead.
Lot of bullpucky.
But he's not dead, right? Paul McCartney's not dead.
What's that?
Is Paul McCartney dead?
Well, there was a conspiracy that he died
in
1966
in
a car
he's
crash,
alive.
But not to my knowledge. And the person, either the Paul McCartney or the person who's been appearing as Paul McCartney since those days, is still alive.
Yes. Okay. And the other thing I'll say, though, they claim, this is how deep, as you were mentioning, the theories go, that Beatles anthology is three, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then she's going to do three because she wore a Beatles shirt while recording.
These are so, honestly, Google it. Is Paul McCartney dead?
Same thing. You're not new, Taylor. You're not new.
And this is pre-internet. The Paul McCartney dead thing, if there were an internet, would be, it'd just be exploding. But good for Taylor. Yeah, release another album. As I said, they don't make as much money on these album releases. You have to stay up front in people's minds so that they're buying your other merchandise or doing whatever or just keep yourself out there.
Yeah.
Go, Taylor. I'm a Swiftie now. Everyone knows
yes,
it.
Yes, I know. All right. Well, before we dive into Beck's, we've chatted so longer than we intended, but it just happens. We're catching up.
Yeah, we are.
We want to give a shout out to our sponsors, starting with Pillar Triple Magnesium. It's a sports micronutrition company who developed products that intersect between pharmaceutical intervention and sports supplements for athletes. This is not your run-of-the-mill magnesium. You guys know I love magnesium. It is a high dose of magnesium glycinate, which is a powerhouse ingredient used by many professional triathletes. John Ferdino, Ben Canute, Olympian Gwynn Jorgensen. Helps with recover. It helps get better sleep, and it helps you get to that starting line in the best condition over and over again. You're going to want to go to thefeed.com. That's where you in the U.S. can buy your Pillar. Use the code 321GO. Thank you, Pillar. And John, you've been using it, and you're talking about having some leg cramps, and maybe it's helping.
I have. I started having some leg cramps a couple days after starting back running after my 10K, and I've been taking the Pillar, and my leg cramps have gone away, and I haven't really done anything else different. So, yeah, give it a try, folks. It's very important. But we also want to thank Sarah Akers with Runs on Magic. Now, Sarah, a lover of Run Disney herself, always loves helping you plan those magical Run Disney weekends, but the world is your oyster with Sarah's help. Whether you're looking to book a honeymoon getaway, all-inclusive girls trip, guys trip to Vegas, family cruise, or international adventure, she is there and she is at your service.
Yeah, I mean, say, I want to go here. She will help you with complimentary travel planning services, personalized itineraries, Run Disney Universal Cruise. Again, like John said, the world is your oyster. When you connect with her, use the promo code 321GO. Find her on Instagram on Runs on Magic, where she shares special offers and more, or email her at runsonmagictravel@gmail.com.
Okay, civilians, it's time for the goods. Let's get on to the interview.
Carissa, we are super excited to have, this is one of those long resumes here, so we'll try to edit it down as best we can. Running coach, sports personality, Peloton instructor, mom, world marathon major, 6-star finisher. Deep breath for the old guy. Bex Gentry joining us on 321GO. Bex, thank you so much for spending some time with us. First of all, how are you? And let everyone know, where are you?
Oh, John, thank you. I am good. I am in... Big wow for that intro. That is just making my cheeks go higher and higher and higher as you kept going there. Hugely grateful to be here. Thank you both for having me. I am in a gray and cold New York right now.
John is obsessed with New York. I think I put a question in there for you, John, just about New York.
I know. I grew up in Washington, D.C., Bex, just to give you some background, and I spent time going, as I was a theater actor kid, I spent time going to New York just so I have a love affair with New York, and the only regret I have really in my entire life is that I never got to live there, but, you know, I didn't have the earning potential, so there you have it.
You're still alive, John.
He was sensible, maybe. I think he could go with that one.
All right, well, Bex.
I didn't have my time in a 200-square-foot apartment, and damn it, I'm so upset by that.
You know what? You just turn around, open those closet doors behind you, and go in there for the next 24 hours. You've got your experience.
I think his wife would like him to do that sometimes. No, I'm just kidding.
This is in my ear. She can't hear it.
Oh, my gosh. All right, well, Bex, you're a woman who I just respect so much because you do it all and you keep reaching for new goals, new opportunities. And as a fellow mom, and I know all the moms out there just love seeing that. But if Bex runs into somebody, you're on an airplane, you're at a party, and they don't know you, how do you describe Bex? What do you say you do?
Oh my gosh, I'm such a goofball. I just always just probably lead with that. I'm Bex. I'm a runner. I always say that first. I'm a running coach. My Peloton family would probably be like, why do you never lead with your Peloton instructor? Because I never think anyone knows who I am. I never presume everybody knows Peloton, or a lot of people obviously do, millions and millions and millions of members out there. Bike is like first. So I get really shy about having to explain myself sometimes. So I'm just like, I'm a runner. I love running. I'm a complete goofball. And then people are like, oh, you're that girl from Peloton. You're the runner. Oh, yeah, I know you.
I asked that because I feel the same way, or almost like I have an identity crisis. Like I don't, what do? I feel like I have to like downplay. Well, I do a lot of things and da-da-da. Like, yeah. Why do we do that as women? Why aren't we just like, this is who I am? Like,
My incredible partner is always the one who will stop and interrupt. And if anyone's asking me like, oh, cool, weird, what do you run? And I'm still, the humility is there. I'm like, oh, marathons, half marathons. And how many have you done? A few. And he will jump in and just be like, she was an Olympic trials qualifier. Her PR is 232. Like blast out all of my stats for me. And then I'm just sitting there like, hi. So awkward. But yeah, why do we do that? Why do I not ever lead with like, boom, this is who I am?
I know. Maybe we'll make that like a goal for Q2. Yeah. It's owning Q2. Who we are. But I love that Austin does that for you because we do need to have those men who support those strong women out there. All right. Let's start with your recent accomplishments on the road. You mentioned some of your marathon accolades, but you just recently finished the Tokyo Marathon, your final star in your Abbott World Majors. And I think I'm pretty sure your first marathon as a mom. So yeah. What was that race like?
Difficult.
Well, it's a marathon, but yes.
It was difficult. It was really tough, honestly. It was, so my final star in the World Marathon Major Series, I've been chasing it since 2016 and am so honored to have been able to do this journey. I know it comes from a very privileged position to go around the world running marathons. Mm-hmm. So I don't take that for granted at all. My first marathon as a mom to Tallulah. I've done my halves, I've done my 10Ks, and this was my first fully fledged 26.2 miles. I ran every step of the way for my baby girl. And it was really difficult. I will go so far as to say my 232.01 at the GB Olympic trials was easier than that last marathon. And I'm going to give you the coach's advice here, because I was so well trained for the Olympic trials and I was so undertrained for Tokyo. That was the difference. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people will be like, what is she talking about? She is a Peloton instructor. She runs 5 days a week. You have to remember that everyone is different and everyone's personal levels of their own training is vastly different. So for me, that is what I'm saying. I was very undertrained for my personal level going into that race. So I will admit, I found it really difficult. I hit a hard wall. I wanted to stop. I was like, can I just turn around and go back to the 13.1 and get half the medal here and, you know, figure it out. I honestly thought it was the first time I thought I was going to have full body cramps. I've never experienced cramping in any marathon. And I thought this was the first time I was like, oh no, this is happening. And I'm going to get through it because I'm running this for tea. But boy, yeah, it taught me that I need to work a little harder when it comes to training for things. And looking at the parents, the caregivers who do this regularly, I am in awe of you all because I know I didn't put the time in because I did other things or I changed my direction at that point. But oh my gosh, it's just, yeah, I look around at this running community of people who are moving their bodies and doing all of these races, and they are full-time in probably two minimum other roles in their life. And you all floor me. You're incredible.
Yeah, it does change a little bit your why of like putting these big races on the map, because, you know, you learn that experience of like, I have to put 100% of me here and 100% of me there. When you got to the start line, did you have an awareness you were undertrained, or did you have that winner, you know, that mentality of like, I can race, I'm going to do this. And then like halfway through, you were like, oh yeah, it caught up with me.
A bit of both. I went into it with probably the most bravado I've ever had. When people would ask me about it, I'm like, I'm Bex Gentry. I can run this. I can run.
I'm a runner. I'm
a runner. And I knew I could finish it. But I did say, when anyone asked or I spoke about it in my Peloton classes, I did say, this is going to be different. I'm going to finish it because I'm an Aries. I'm stubborn. I'm a mom. I am my mom's daughter. There's all of these things coming together. I'm going to finish this race. How I do it, I'm not too sure right now. I'm not going to be able to go with a time or a feeling. And then on the start line, I'd run my 20 miles. I had done my long run, but I hadn't done the speed work. I hadn't done the cumulative miles in the build up. The training is the hard work for a marathon. Marathon, the race day is the celebration. This is what we forget. Like, people who don't actually race on race day, they still should get the medal because the hard work is all those weeks before. So it was all of the fluff around those long runs that I hadn't done. And that's what I think got me on race day. And I'll just take very quickly what actually helped me on the start line was the kind of chaos that was Tokyo Marathon. It was a very strange start, I will say. It was just like all of a sudden, nothing was happening. Then all of a sudden we were going and it was off. And this confetti cannon of fully recyclable and biodegradable paper came fluttering down, and this white heart just floated down right in front of me, and I grabbed it and I was like, that's my baby girl. That is a sign from a higher power telling me that your baby girl is with you and she's going to get you through this race. And I tucked it into my sports bra, like carefully laid it on my chest flat, and I had it in the back of my phone forever after that race, and now it's being framed to go on the wall with my medal, and just so one day I can tell her like I carried that tiny tissue paper heart with me for 26.2 miles to remind me that no matter how tough it is, you're here with me. Even though she was all the way in New York and I was all the way in Tokyo, and she got me through. So that was how it helped on the day.
Well, you kind of led me into my question, Bex, too, because as somebody who's not a marathoner, and let's just say it right here, Carissa knows it, never gonna do a marathon. Doing my first 10K in a couple of weeks, and I'm absolutely terrified. And if I could have a child to get out of it, I would do that. I do love to travel, and internationally as well. And you mentioned how odd it was. Culturally, how different was the Tokyo Marathon from marathons you've run, specifically, say, here in the U.S.?
Yeah, they were really organized, really, really organized. They were very kind to the runners. And I'm not saying any other race. I mean, New York City is the best marathon, I think, in the world. And anyone who's part of the New York Road Runners teams and are the best people in the world and the kindest. But I mean, like when you pick up your bib, their subway underground system partner with them, and they gave us all like 24-hour passes so we could get the subway there instead of a ton of cars going there. So it's all good for the world, the environment, I mean, by the world. And though the energy was completely other end of the spectrum, and it was louder than I thought it was going to be. People prepped me for it to be quite quiet. I think Asian culture itself is a lot quieter. They're not a big clapping people. It's a lot like, there's more like yays, but there's not a lot of clapping that happens in Asian culture. And I was like, I haven't actually dug into the whys, but I think there is a why behind that. So I kind of was ready for there almost to be nobody on the course. And having done some of the races I've done, that's kind of fine. I've run a lot of races that are quiet in my career, but there was more people around. The course itself, I did not like. Sorry, Tokyo Foundation.
I heard you talk about this in your recap run, which I told my husband about it because we want to go run. And I was like, listen, Beck swore that if someone denied that it was flat, she would call them a liar.
Liar. And I understand, okay? All of my race people out there, my race directors are like, Bex, be quiet. But I understand. On a course elevation, there has to be a significant gain for a course to be called hilly. An elevation gain. There is not a significant elevation gain point in Tokyo at all. It is undulating. So like the first half of New York City Marathon is similar. It's very undulating all the way. And that was Tokyo. There was not a flat moment. I swear to you, I promise it wasn't a flat moment. So all of my running, like my running geeks, my Matt Wilpers out there are like, it's flat. Like, it's technically, yes. Okay, fine. By the textbook, it's flat, but you still need to train hills to get up and down this. But the course was three out and backs, essentially. So fantastic if you're up front because you get to see the elites a few times doing their out and backs, which is great. But then I think even better if you're a bit further back because then you get to see all the other runners. Like you get to see the big packs of people coming through. And that was, I think, would have been much more thrilling than where I was because I kind of saw the elites once and then the rest of the time it was no man's land. There was just no one around. So I think that's why I found it a little bit more of a challenge because I didn't get much distraction is the nicest
yes,
word.
Distraction is helpful when you're out there. You talked about the culture and quick sidebar stories. Wes and I have been to Tokyo several times. He worked for ASICS, so he spent about half of his life in Japan. And so we were going to run at Shibuya Crossing one morning and we're in our very like loud American neon stuff. And we get on the subway and everybody's, you know, in there all black and they're very quiet. And we're mm-hmm. standing in the subway and my husband is in a tank top. So he's holding on, which, you know, men in tank tops, you get a little bit of the armpit hair. And I look around and we are in the all woman's car. So not only are we these, we weren't loud, but like loud colored, tank topped, bright Americans. Like, I'm like, babe, we have to get out. Get out. Oh, it's so embarrassing. And they're also lovely and they're so wonderful and they're so respectful and they're just silent. But I was like, oh, I was mortified culturally for us. But it is an amazing place. It's an amazing culture. I know you guys got to do some great sightseeing. What was your favorite thing that you did there outside of the run?
Taking the bullet train was something I was so excited about. I don't know why. I hate eels, but I think it looks like an eel. So I'm still struggling to like, why was I excited by the bullet train when I really do not like eels, but I think they're similar. And then getting like out in Kyoto was really beautiful. It was calm. It was very relaxing out there. And then I think Austin and I just spent a really nice day where we didn't do any pointed sightseeing. We just walked around Tokyo. We didn't like get the map out and plan to go to this shrine, this park, this area. And we just found our way. Like we walked from Shibuya. We walked all the way up to Shinjuku, to Harajuku. And then we did find ourselves in a park and saw some great things. But we did, and we ate our way around. But I think the culture out there as well, everybody is, as you said, Carissa, so kind and respectful mm-hmm. to one another. And it was a real stark wake up when I got back to New York of how rude we actually are to one another. And I know for everyone outside of New York, you're like, no, shocking there. You are all renowned for being really rude in New York. But it was really like mm-hmm. everybody follows one another on the arrowed pathway to walk to the subway or stands on the sides to politely let people come off. So it's easy and flowing for the other people to get on. And it's just as though everybody there is like, I do not consider myself more important than the next person. We're all on an equal mm-hmm. level here. And if we function well together, it's the better for society. It just felt really good doing that.
And calmer.
Get out my way. I'm coming through. Yeah, everyone's loud. Oh my God. The minute I got off the plane, there were these like Gen Zs just squeaking about like how tired they were. Nah, 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 nah. Like doing their TikToks. I was like, oh, shut up. I have not missed that for 10 days.
Yeah, I had the exact same. We went from Tokyo, Japan, and then I took my daughter to Disney World the next day, and I was like on the ferry with the exact same realization, like, oh, yep, welcome back. But it's so lucky that we do get to travel and see all these different cultures and worlds and get to run them. I want to ask you, we touched a little bit about, you know, being a mom and the training being harder. Physically for you, how was that comeback for you? And just to have other moms here who might be on that sort of journey back from that postpartum into running.
Absolutely. I like to pivot the comeback to a grow forward. I know comeback is an easy saying that we have been historically just been saying, and we say it without really much meaning of like, oh, what you were before. The growth that you know so well as a mom yourself is huge when you become a parent. You start, as you say, giving 100% of yourself to something else, and their survival is inherent to your survival for those at least first few months.
Literally.
When you are hanging on by a thread anyway. And it is, I took so much time to love my body. And for somebody who has gone through eating disorders, who's gone through body dysmorphia, who's gone through a decade of being a runner and just understanding how, as a female, hormonally, your body changes month by month, and then physically, like aesthetically, your body changes when you're running, like whether you're lifting weights, whether you're not, whether you're running more. And just figuring that all out, you know, from my mid-20s to my mid-30s is such a pivotal point in a woman's life of change. And then also doing that in the public eye has been like, whoa, there's a lot going on here. So I never loved my body more than when I was pregnant. I had pregnancy loss before we conceived Tallulah, and I hated my body for that time. I just, you know, times I blame running. I was like, well, if I hadn't pushed myself so hard, maybe this wouldn't have happened. And then you get pregnant and you're suddenly like, oh, wow. Oh my gosh. I have to love this body way more all of a sudden. And I could still run. And the longer I went through my pregnancy and my doctors and my midwife kept telling me I was okay to run, hey, this is great. I love this body again. These level up and up and up. I loved how I looked when I was pregnant. I loved the glow, and I loved that my true happiness was radiating through me. And that taught me a lot in understanding what truly makes me happy to my core. And then just being a mom at the start, it was, I mean, there's no book. And everyone says that. You just get this baby and they're like, okay, bye. You're like, what?
Right?
Every other thing I've ever had to do successfully in my life, I have learnt and studied and had to pass tests and do all of this. The most important thing in my life comes my way. No test, no nothing.
You're sitting in a chair in the middle of the night going,
what do I do? It doesn't talk my language. I've done the three things that everyone tells me to check.
What
else? Can't call my mom. It's the middle of the night in the UK.
But you can call your mom, but you know, you probably did.
At any point. But it was just having that, and it still is the same. Nothing is more important to me than spending time with Tallulah. And it was very weird for somebody who nothing was more important than going for my run, switching that. And that was a huge part in why I wasn't as trained for Tokyo, because there were days when I should have gone and done a training session, but I looked at my baby girl and I was like, you know what? It's going to be way more fun hanging out with you for a couple of hours off work instead. And I did. And I am not ashamed of that at all, because I'm never going to get that time back with her. There's going to be plenty of time when she is a teenager and she wants nothing to do with me that I can go for those long runs.
Nail those master's records. Get after.
So yeah, the comeback was my forward. It was a lot of learning. My first run outside, I don't know whether you felt this, the first like half a mile, I felt like I was in a movie. I was running along Flushing Avenue here in Brooklyn. like, oh, I barely lost any fitness. Look at me go. This is amazing. I feel great. Half a mile. Oh my God. Could barely breathe. Had to stop, which I don't think I've ever stopped after half a mile, unless it was like at a sprint pace or something, yeah. You know, where it's a due recovery. I could not breathe. I was puce. My face was so red. Every blood vessel I felt was like trying to come out of my pores. It was just so humbling to be like, okay, yeah, that whole growing a human and birthing a human was a lot on the body. So I really reeled it back in, and this is going to sound like a plug, but it is honestly not. Having my Peloton tread and my Peloton app was like having my best friends, because a lot of them are.
Yeah. And we all think that they all are, just for you. Yeah. Everybody, we all think you're all of our best friends. Like, okay, so.
But you know what it's like. You're just like, I trust those people. I'm going to go on. We have these classes called Extra 10s, Extra 5s. Mm-hmm. I was part of creating those and bringing them onto the tread. I'd forgotten about them, honestly. God's honest truth, forgotten about them. And then when I started getting back onto the tread and doing my walk plus runs, and then these little like suggested classes would pop up of like, oh, extra 5. Like, yeah, okay, today I feel like I've got that energy. And I built it up with that of having my best friends in my Peloton community just nudge me every now and again of like, can you do an extra 10 minutes today? You feeling strong? Okay, do it. And that's how it happened. But it was, boy, it was that was like the pregnancy, growing the child, the birth, and then the wake up of what this iteration of your body is. That was like the fourth massive lesson.
Before I jump onto the next question, it just reminded me, our mutual friend, Chris and my Joe Candelora, explained when he had his first child, he said, I have no memory of anything that ever happened, days before or days after, except at some point someone handed me this little baby and said, keep this alive for the next 21 years, and walked away. And he said, that's all I can remember, was like, this is what they've now presented to me. So have at it. There's no handbook. It's, not being a parent, I defer to all of you with that. But let's switch gears for a little bit, and as opposed to talking about your athletic career and what you do athletically, you've also morphed into a commentator role. In March, the New York City Half, you joined the broadcast team with our good friend Carrie Tollefson. What was that like? How was that experience for you?
Oh, that was a dream come true, John, honestly. Since I was a little girl, I used to stand in front of Ski Sunday, which was a TV show, obviously on a Sunday in the UK, and it would bring all of the ski races from around Europe. And it had the best theme tune, which I can't even think of right now. And I would stand in front of it with whatever was around, and I would commentate it to my parents. And being there that day with Carrie and Ryan was making that little girl so proud of, oh my gosh, you're doing this. You're doing broadcast commentary on a sport that is in your blood, and doing it next to Carrie, who I admire so much. I love her to bits. Her knowledge, her expertise, her experience is huge. So I'm like a sponge when I'm next to her, just learning as much as I can. And it was a great change. I did the New York City Marathon as well. I was with the team there, just doing like finish line commentary, and so this was a great next level to be in the booth next to those two legends. And my cheeks hurt for 3 days after that. I mean, just that we were stationed obviously at the finish line, so I got to see my incredible colleagues who were running the race, as well as a lot of Beck's Beast runners, a lot of Peloton members, friends coming through. Honestly, I like days after, I was like, this has got to stop.
It is funny because hold on, John, I just want to elaborate for people. When you're the finish line person or you're the sideline reporter, you know, which I've done, it's not as much pressure, right? You know, they're coming to you, you have your little bubble, you know what you're doing, and you get out. But when you're on the stage, you've got the headphone on, you don't get to miss a beat. It is 100% focused. But I know that Carrie is such a good supporter of other women. Yes. And I'm sure, I mean, I know you nailed it, but do you have a moment that you were like, yes, yeah, no, I was good.
She'll hate me for saying, no, she won't, because she's so proud of this. She has these documents that she makes. I'm sure you've seen them, the races that you've done together with her. these multi-page spreadsheet documents that she prints out onto A3 size. Like, they're huge. And it has everyone's information, all of the elite athlete information, their races, their past races, their PRs, their husband, wife, kids, I don't know, everything on there. And there was just one or two moments where it would be, they throw it to me and I was doing predominantly the men's race and she was doing predominantly the women's race. And there was just points where she would like write down the phonetical pronunciation of a few people's names as a reminder, because she could see my brain somehow being like, oh no, I've forgotten how to say that. And like, or this person's PR. And she just like pushed the thing in front of me and point to it. And she's so calm to be around as well. She's incredibly fun, but very calm. That balance is phenomenal to me. And just knowing she was there, I think we've spent time together now. We've run a lot together. And I think we're learning to like pick up off one another. Her experience, she's definitely picking up more off me of, okay, when she needs a little bit of a rescue out of a moment. And yeah, forever grateful to her for her camaraderie, that's for sure.
Well, obviously you have to have prep time for your Peloton classes and everything, but I know what it's like when you're presented with a new challenge like that. Your preparation time is crucial. What was that like for you? And did you find, like a lot of people do, that you were wonderfully overprepared? Because that's what most of us have a tendency to do.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, you should have seen me the nights before, just with my notebook, writing essays on each of these athletes. And then the day comes and you have seconds to talk about these people in hot hits. You know, it's like, boop, 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 boop. But in my brain beforehand, I was like, well, we have nearly 2 hours on air. So, oh my gosh, I know all the stuff I have to talk about in a 1 hour Peloton class is a lot. So yeah, I was fully fledged diving into people's, like, way back when so-and-so was doing cross country when they were 10 years old. No one needs to know that. No one wants to hear about that. They want to hear about the recent cross country or the recent races that they've done. But it feels good, right, to be that prepared, because then you know, if you are a brain that absorbs that information, I knew I had backup. If I froze, I knew it was going to be there.
Yeah, that's the key. The other side of it is that here we are, and now I'm underprepared for what happens, and here's the curveball, and that's the terrified feeling. It's the actor's, the horrible actor's nightmare of walking on stage, and wait, I didn't learn the lines to this play. I learned it to something else. So I'm fully there with you. Well, let's talk about Peloton, finally. How far in are we? 29 minutes
I know. People listening are like, you haven't asked her about Peloton yet? It's been 29 minutes. What's going on?
All right. So you are incredibly popular. You're an inspiration to runners, walkers, rowers, athletes on Peloton. But my background is musical theater. Carissa is a performer. What we want to know is, what was the audition process like for that gig? Did you have to do like 30 miles on a Peloton bike while just doing improvisational comedy? What happened? I need to know.
I wish that might be more Hannah Corbin, because she is our Broadway our Broadway cyclist over there. No. Okay, so I would say it's coming up on 7 years that I got a very, very cryptic message from my friend at the time, Rebecca Kennedy. And I don't mean we're not friends now. I just mean we were just friends. Love her to bits now. Sisters now. But we had previously worked together as Nike trainers as part of the global Nike team. And it was summer 2018, I think, or 2017. Oh, gosh, I can't even remember. So 6 years. Anyway, and yeah, so 2017. She messaged me. She's like, so if you ever had the chance to coach fitness, but move to another country, but another big city, would you explore it? So I was like, is this like, what? What's happening? I don't understand. Is this a lead up to something we're doing at the next Nike summit? I don't know. And then we had a quick chat on the phone, a very, very tight NDA came over on email. And then she explained what she was doing. So she'd been brought in by Robin Arson early on in the iteration of the tread coming out to create the Tread team. And she had said, okay, yeah, I know exactly who I want on the team from the people that she knew around her. And I was one of those lucky people. And, you know, she'd said to the Peloton C-suite team at the time, one problem, she lives in London. So we need to get her over here. So essentially to start the ball rolling, I had to record an audition tape on a Tread, but it was boot camp. So we had to do a boot camp class because that's efficient. That's kind of how we thought we were going to, and sort of is how we started really on Tread. And it was hilarious. No one used to have Treads in London unless you were very, very rich and had the space. And because the houses are so old and creaky, they'd probably fall through. So one of my, I was a private personal trainer. I had my own personal training business in London. One of my lovely, lovely clients at the time allowed me to use her gym and just bring a tripod in. She was like, yeah, just go for it. Do whatever you need to do. And I recorded this video and I still have it on my phone. It's never going to, I saved it in so many different places because one day I know our Peloton comms team is going to ask for our audition tapes for something or someone will somewhere. And I look back on it quite often. Honestly, John, now you've said that. Now I'm thinking about how often I look back on it. It's quite scary. And you can see the like brightness in my eyes of nerves and like, what am I doing? And I'd done stuff on camera with Nike. We'd done events, but it was never just me and the camera doing this one class. And oh my gosh, it was hilarious. And so everyone else had obviously done that audition in person because they were in the US, if not New York, I think at that point. So this was very strange, you know, just recording it, clicking send and being like, oh no, this could be the start of my future. Or there's just a bunch of strangers laughing their butts off at this.
Yeah, no, they'll play it at the Christmas party. That's it. Here's the people we didn't hire. Take a look and roll it. I'm convinced they do that with all of our bad auditions we record.
Which is all John does.
But that's how it went. And then the next audition, I was lucky enough to come to New York. Three auditions in.
Wow.
They offered me the job and that's how it went. But every time I came to New York, it was another audition. But we were in the studio. It was about, you know, looking at all the cameras, seeing all the lights and getting used to the production element of what we do at Peloton, which I think a lot of people still to this day completely forget that it is a huge production as well as very authentic fitness programming as well.
I don't ever forget. So when I, because of my background, I'm like, camera, camera. And then, okay, this is a question I didn't say I was going to ask this. I hope this is okay to ask because I'm always thinking it. You have notes. Are you seeing your notes when you're doing the class? Okay, because I wonder that all the time. So now I feel better that I know that you're seeing your notes. But can you walk us through your creation process for Peloton? So I know you just did an awesome 75-minute run. So when they say, Bex, you've got a 75-minute run, like what's the time from when you know what you're creating to crafting the class and the music to working with your producer? Like how does that process work?
Well, we have our schedules like quite far in advance, for sure. Like months in advance, we'll have our schedule for the classes that are on there. And this is just totally speaking from my personal opinion. I don't plan too far ahead because I like to see how I'm feeling near the time. Definitely when it comes to playlists, it's a mood thing. Music is definitely a mood thing. You might be going through something personally where you want to just jam out to some hard rock and or punk and let it go in those classes, or you're having a chill time. Unless it is a music specific class. Like if I have a classical run, obviously I have to play classical.
Which John,
music.
You might really like you could get the app. It's just classical runs it's beautiful.
Yeah. And it works.
I have a misspent punk rock youth, so that's actually appealing to me right now.
So. Punk rock run. 20-minute punk rock run from the other day.
I just want nothing but the Clash, the Sex Pistols, the Buzzcocks, just all of that. Play it loud in my ear. That's what I need.
Traditional is what is going to be my next punk, pop punk. Yeah, for sure. Punk rock. But yeah, from iteration to delivering it, gosh, it really differs because we do everything from 5 minutes to 75 or 90. Matt Wilpers did a 2-hour ride the other by the month. So our classes are all such different lengths, and the notes that we put in, again, differs on person and the type of the class. So my 75-minute pop run, I just wanted to go through a lot of running principles, because as much as it was a pop music focused run, I'm a coach to my core. And I couldn't just go on the music for the whole 75 minutes. It had to be something that was going to be useful to people for 75 minutes. I'm not just going to get you to go up and down on the chorus and the bridge and all of that for that time. So I wanted to take you through the disciplines of running so you could understand endurance running, tempo, pace. Then we did some random stuff on the choruses. And the music, though, has to go on the journey with you. And that's where, oh, wow, you can go down holes upon holes of, okay, this is great here. This doesn't work here. Okay, reset, delete. And like, I don't know, some days it's terrible. I did a run the other week that had everything from CCR, John Mayer, to Diplo, Bad Bunny. It was just all over the place. But you never know what's going to stick for some people on the day. Like, there are some days where my brain is like that, where I'm just like, squirrel, squirrel, squirrel. And that's how that music was.
Well, it's like radio when I was a kid, is the pop station would play soul music, and then there'd be hard rock, and then you'd get country. And now everything's so boutiqued. It's like, I listen to New Wave between 1987, February of 1987, and August of 1989, and nothing else. That's all I listen to. There's a whole station for it. Well, you mentioned the different types. Do you have a favorite type of class to teach?
I love a 60-minute intervals run. That is one of my favorites. I do love my classical runs because I'm a big believer that we get lost in other people's narratives today. We're very overstimulated by what other people are doing, and we kind of forget our own journey. So when classical music is presented to me, I say 80% of the time I will choose stuff without lyrics. If I choose stuff with lyrics, it's probably opera. And so if you happen to speak the language of the opera, you might understand it. But I would say for most of our audience, the larger part of the audience aren't going to be able to understand as they're running. And so I like to allow people the time to just get into their own narrative as they are cruising along in these runs or walks and reset their brains. And so the intervals runs, I like to do that too. I'm a big like ambient music person of letting it go. But I will say I do like a bit of funky disco, like remix of the 90s remixed into like a deep house kind of track that's going to get me really running fast.
Well, I love all of your runs. I love your storytelling. But what I think you guys do so well as Peloton instructors and as race announcers, we wear this hat too, is you have to motivate people. And sometimes you're motivating people that you don't see, or you like don't know what they're going through. And I thought it was interesting in one of your runs you were talking about, it might've been the one about Tokyo, that you had to become to yourself Bex the Peloton instructor. Like, is it hard when you say these things to people? And I stand there on stage and I say them too, like, you get to do this. And then I go on my own run and I'm negative in my head. And you have to switch that. Like, what is that like now for you when you see, maybe you're seeing yourself in your mind, like motivating Bex? What would Bex tell somebody else?
It's so weird, isn't it? Yeah. When you're like, how can I motivate all these people to get over these finish lines? And then you're by yourself on a run going, I'm just going to stop right now. Like, no, I can't. But you dig deep, you get into those mindsets. And mine is a funny one because I like to try and make people laugh and distract them from the potential discomfort that they're feeling whilst they're running. But this is I think the one you're talking about in the moment of Tokyo, when I started to look down at the floor. And I say this to all of my runners, I say it in my classes a lot. Do not look down. There's only defeat. Ha 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 ha. Bad joke. Bad joke. But also fact.
Yes.
So the minute you sort of, it gives you time to process the humor and then just go, okay, good. Now I feel better. Now I'm not so defeated. I've seen defeat and I'm smiling and I can get through this at least next minute or two because I've had a moment of humor. And my Tokyo marathon pictures are terrible. Also, the photographers need to level up a little bit on their race for sure. But I'll be posting them because I'm not shy. Running ain't a pretty sport. And there are a lot of photos where I look down and then you just see the gradual where I must have thought of my own stupid joke and gone, ha, funny. Because like two shots later, I'm just smiling like, ha, to the cameraman. So it does, yeah, it is getting into the things you say, but it helps. It does help. And like I talk about breaking runs down into digestible chunks. And for me, way back, I used to, when I was a broke trainer living in London, I couldn't afford the underground, I would run to my clients around London. And there were days where, gosh, I didn't want to do it. It was pouring. It was cold, whatever. But I would break it down. And there would always be this one client who was first thing in the morning. Her session started at 5 a.m. So I'd be out the door at 4 with my backpack for like the whole day with, you know, personal training stuff in, not just, you know, I don't know, marshmallows or whatever. It was
That's the personal heavy. Trainer John's going to hire.
Go on.
Yeah, I'll sign up now. And her home was 8 kilometers away from mine in London. So what, 5 miles? And I still to this day, I will see 8 kilometers or 5 miles from somewhere, in a, like especially in a marathon from the finish line. And I will be like, there's no way you're not doing this, because you remember how many mornings you got up and you did that run and did the whole rest of your day and then ran home those 8K. You're doing this right now, because that was a digestible chunk of work that I managed to bite off and chew so many times that I knew it was achievable, even on the dark days.
That's awesome. You guys, I know you know this, but the Peloton instructors, and I hope at race announcers we do it too, is like you give these people these nuggets that they don't know they're in there, but then when they need them, they come out and you help people get over whatever their obstacles are and help them achieve things that they didn't think was possible. There's been plenty of times when I'm pulling a Christine. I am, I can, I will, I do, just over and over. And, you know, thank you to all of you instructors for all the great motivation that you give, because you guys are all supremely talented.
And we do it. I say it in all my class. I say my other instructors' taglines in the classes. This is tough, but you are tougher. Like, oh,
you didn't
sign
up for a 42-minute workout. Like, that's how it
is. Exactly. We love it.
All right. I have to ask this, and I know we're pressed for time, but Carissa knows I'm obsessed with the New York City Marathon, because for almost 35 years, I've been part of large events, and the logistics, knowing New York, the logistics of that just blow me away. And you brought it up earlier, best marathon in the world. What about that race is so different? And are you, like me, simply amazed that they can get together and do this through all the boroughs? Because it still blows me away. Ferries, buses, taxi cab, everything they have to take into account to get people to that starting line and then the finish line.
Yeah. It's magical. Everything from being a spectator to the day I ran it was, and I think always will be, the best run of my life. I just can't help but have this reaffirmation every year that the race happens, the day of the race, that we can unite, we can stand together. This big city, this big lion, growling, angry, rude city can come together as one on that day and cheer for everyone who is out there. And it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter who you are. Like, that's one of the things I love about running. You can be a surgeon who's just come out of operating theater, scrubbed yourself down, put on your running shoes, running next to a first year student, you know, and no one cares. It's not about what you do. It's just about moving. And I think that is such a beautiful thing in this city of competition, of really not supporting each other the other 364 days of the year. That day is a wow moment to see these strangers shouting and really going for, rooting for all these other strangers, these 50,000 people running past them and compelling them to finish this awesome achievement. They don't know who they are. They're never going to see them again, probably. But for in that split second of life, if you lock eyes with somebody, either way, you're a runner or a spectator, there's a connection. And that's so beautiful. And I think it's just, especially in a city like this, we don't see it that often. And it's a huge shout out to New York Roadrunners who put this on year after year, to all of the services in New York that help support, keep everyone safe and happy from being at the finish line this past year. Just understanding the level of work that goes into it over the weekend after the race. It's phenomenal. So, you know, more of it. We need more of it. We need more of these, like, these cuddles, these big loving moments. And I think everybody comes out that day. There isn't a person in New York that day that goes, oh, the marathon's happening? Oh, I had no idea. It's just not a thing. But you can go to Tokyo, which is one of the World Marathon Major Series. It is one of six global events. You could be in Tokyo and people are like, "The what? What's that? What is a marathon?" That doesn't happen here. And it's just, yeah. Well, I could talk for hours about how much I love the New York City Marathon, and I will be here cheering and supporting forever. Anyone who wants to do it should do it. You know, you can walk it, jog it, run it, race it, whatever you want, but it will be there for you.
That's just a beautiful way to put it. And I'm going to get there one day. We have a Disney race the same weekend. So it has been a challenge to get there, but I always liken the finish line of a marathon to Love Actually, when he talks about the people getting off the planes and they're not saying angry words at each other. There's so much love. And that's kind of what I feel like you encapsulated there. All right. I know you have to go. So I'm going to skip to the one question we ask everybody here on 3, 2, 1, go. And that is, and it's a hard question. What is the most inspiring thing that you've seen at a race?
Oof. London Marathon, finish line area. I'm going to forget what year it was, but it was, I can't remember what year. I was there, so I'm guessing it was pre-2018. And seeing a guy coming in, he was literally ready to get his sub three. I think it might have been his first sub 3 hour marathon. And another runner was starting to wobble and starting to wobble, getting lower. And he stopped, like, on the mile, more or less, or maybe on the other side, but meters, hundreds of meters from the finish line. He stopped and he grabbed this guy so he didn't go down, and they walked in together, and he didn't get his sub three, but they both finished. And I know that happens a lot at races, but actually being there, seeing it, and like screaming for this guy to, like, he was like, yes, like coming in. And he just put everything aside for humanity in that moment. And oh my God, I could cry right now just even remembering it. I just was bawling, and I don't know who he was. I just wanted to hug him and hold him. And he stayed with the guy. And I saw it again at the New York City half a few weeks ago. A girl was literally unable to stand up by herself. But two or three other runners, and this, I promise you, was 20 meters from the finish line, stopped on their run, and they got her over the finish line together and stayed with her until medical attention came. And I just love seeing that complete and utter disregard for the self in the moment, making sure that your fellow human, your fellow runner can achieve because they're that close. And it was, oh, it's so beautiful. It's scary, but it's beautiful.
It's a beautiful sport. I think running makes us better humans. It makes us healthier. It makes our, you know, the quality in our life, but it does help us appreciate everyone who gets out there and can get that movement in. And that's what you do, Beck. So thank you for your coaching, your inspiration, your love of the sport, and everything you do across all the platforms of Peloton. And thank you for spending this time with us today on 3, 2, 1, Go. It was an honor. We cannot watch to see all the exciting things that I know you have coming up. We'll be sharing everything with you on Instagram and on the tread and on the rower. So thank you so much, Bex.
Thanks, Bex.
Thank you.
All right, athletes, here's the drill. Time to shape up your diet. Harissa, give them the goods.
All right, John, when you're out there on the course, and I think this is going to come to play for you in the 10K, you're going to make it a healthier you, which this will be airing after you've done your 10K. But you need some fuel. You're going to need some sugar.
You know what? Prior to our recording today, I've actually been checking out for like runner's equipment and thinking, I need a belt or something. I'm going to need something and some shorts, something where I can keep at least a power bar or something for myself.
The Sport Beans, which we have on course at Disney, those could be great for you. They have a caffeine and non-caffeine. But the point of that is that the sugar is going to provide quick energy because the faster absorbed sugars, the things we usually tell you to avoid because they spike blood sugar, that's what you need because it's rapidly absorbed and utilized by your body to fuel performance. So we're thinking about glucose. That's the primary energy source for body cells, sports drink, gels, energy bars, like you mentioned. If you find yourself out there and you haven't had anything, John, the sport drink is the place to go because that has the sugar. But I would recommend you trying sports drink on one of your longer runs first. Always, we want to see how we tolerate these things. So this would be something you want to try. Or even when you're doing yard work and you're finding yourself exerting, drink a little, keep going, and see how your body tolerates that. But all of the sports drinks, those are good because they're designed for performance. Fruits is a big thing Europeans take, but they have fructose, which is absorbed slower. So I say for beginners, start with just things that are glucose-based. Honey Stinger gels are great. The Clif Chews, those are all great. But I say for new runners, Sport Beans or the Chew Gummy Blocks, those are the best place to start with a Powerade. And you want to practice it, John. I want you to practice your nutrition. So the next time you're doing a run, it's going to take you over 30 minutes. I want you to eat something at minute 15 to see how that feels. Because that's something you do have to train as well. You're training your distance. You have to train your nutrition. Because as you've heard on the podcast, the only thing you can control on race day is your nutrition.
Right.
So make sure you don't forget that. But remember, the sugar is important. It keeps your brain engaged too. So when those negative thoughts come in, that fatigue starts to come in, that's going to help you. Lots of different options out there. Hammer Gel, Noon Sport, Clif Energy Shots, as we mentioned. Honey Stinger is a good one. Gatorade has some options. They're usually readily available at the expo. So that would be a good place for you to kind of walk around, find something. Or if you want to visit your local running store, they're going to have those as well. Or if you want to just learn a ton about race nutrition and be the expert, then join me in Healthier You, because that's part of what we do in our seminars every month as we answer a lot of running-related questions. Someone will say, I don't tolerate this. What should I try? What do I need to do differently? We troubleshoot that. So if you want a dietitian like me to help you troubleshoot your race nutrition, then join us at Healthier You. Go to GalawayCourse.com to sign up and use the code PODCAST.
Athletes, listen up. It's mail call time. Announcer three, present.
All right, Sarge, this is one for both of us. Carissa, comes from Chiquita 19722. And Chiquita asks, do you ever get nervous announcing? You make it look so easy. I'll throw that to you first. Do you ever, Carissa, get nervous when we're announcing?
I feel like there's like, if I say no, then I sound like a little bit uppity. But I think at Disney, we're so comfortable in what we do that I don't necessarily at Disney get nervous. Maybe sometimes if they're throwing in, like when we had Sonia Richards-Ross up on stage with us, it wasn't necessarily nervous, but I was excited and I wanted to make sure that we kind of nailed that. I don't get nervous, but I get more focused as we get closer to the start, making sure that we're getting that first initial start right. I think, and what we talked about with Bex in this podcast when she did, you know, when she does her commentating, if you've prepared properly, I think that for me fends off nerves in like a race announcing situation because I'm comfortable that I know what to do. Now, running a race, that's a different story, but announcing, I think not so much nervous anymore. What about you, John?
Well, I think we need to shout out to our old director, John Phelan, our director, Mark Ferreira now, in that they actually put together, we have a structure now that maybe in the beginning we didn't have. And I mean, you and I go back 20 years with this, but with that structure, you're right, seem really, really well prepared. There's always a bit of like nervous energy when we're going to go on stage. I wouldn't say I'm getting nervous, but it's that energy. It's like you're ramping yourself up. And then the weirdness of the fact that we've been up since, you know, 12:45 at night and changes it a little from being nervous if you're doing a play or something. But and there are those moments, to your point, when they throw something at us that we weren't expecting. Often, you know, we have breaks built in that it's like, we don't have time for that break. This has gone long, or we're getting something in our IFB. We need to throw it down here or go to this video. So, I mean, I just think it keeps you having some level. It's not anxiety. It's not necessarily nervousness, but an energy that's driven by an uncertainty, mm-hmm. I think, is not a bad thing to have because it keeps you focused. If you get too comfortable, and I said this many years ago, I've done the horror makeup show at the Universal Studios since 1990, and the show's changed over a couple of years, so that, you know, you kind of have to pay a little more attention. But for 6 or 7 years, it was essentially the same show, and I'm midway through the show balancing my checkbook in my head because I get so comfortable. But then that's a bad feeling because mm-hmm. you get to a certain point and you go, Did we do all the things we're supposed to do? And where are we right now? So yeah, little bit of nervous energy, but it's not a negative thing at all.
No, you're talking about the balancing check, but I think at Disney, we're always having to be very fully engaged. And I think what also prevents the nerves is that if one of us, quote unquote, makes a mistake, we're not going to let the other person. You know what I mean? There's the other person is going to pick it up. And then you and I have worked together for so long that, like we've said before in the podcast, why are you staring at me? And then you realize there's a reason that I'm intently boring into your eyes because I'm trying to will you to know what I'm – that there's something
there's also
that
an old
changed.
And I'll clean up the language, but there's an old theater adage. When you F up, feature it. Mm-hmm. That if something that – and you and I have done it. If I say – because I always make the mistake, and I'll admit it right here – on 5K day at marathon, I start bringing up the Mylar. I get it. It's an untimed race. I always forget about that. And you always bring it up. Well, that's great, John, but it's an untimed race. So you just can't be afraid. In that situation, you're going to say silly things. Things are going to go wrong. And I'm not really nervous, to your point, that that'll cause a problem. It comes down to more with other logistics because there are a lot of other moving pieces that have nothing to do with our mics, our cameras, or that go on during a race. So it does keep you a little bit on your toes. And we have, to your point, enough of a team now that we can throw it to somebody to cover if we're dealing with something that's a little bit difficult. But
don't get nervous. Don't want people to think that we're saying we don't get nervous, like, because we don't care, and we do. But if I do the math, and let's just say we've done 12 races, four events. I'm not even going to count marathon as four. I'm going to count them as three. Let's just say there's 12 races a year. And let's say there's been 12 races a year for 12 years. That's 144 races that you and I have done on a stage at Disney. And that's a low bar when I add in. So
yeah,
it's our job. And so we take it seriously. Our brains are always engaged. And I will say, to that point in the trailer, I always feel like I have to apologize. Like when Matt Pablo joined, I had to apologize to him because I am not very chatty in the trailer in the morning. I am kind of just getting my energy ready. I am preparing my energy to give it out there, to not that I don't want to get to know you, but like in this moment, I'm not the chatty person. And so our trailer, picture an RV.
You didn't speak for me for the first 4 years we did the race. I don't think we ever spoke. So,
true,
you know, other than on stage.
No, but our trailer has, if you walk into the front of the trailer, there's the sitting area with the kitchen table. And then you go farther back, there's another bathroom. There's a place we get dressed. I will hide in the back. Because I'm kind of, again, immense. I'm conserving my energy. I'm thinking through what we're going to do. So I think for me, that prevents the nerves. If I was chatting and it was like, oh, it's time to go, I would be, oh, I have it. I'm not ready. But because I'm ready, that helps me. And so, again, I apologize to people in the trailer that I didn't ask you like your dog's name or like what you like to do at 3:45.
And let's be honest. Somebody who's too chatty in the trailer at 1:30 in the morning – and I don't need to say the names. It gets a little annoying.
I mean, Tracy Wu is getting to the chatty side some mornings. and I'll tell her that. So we had a DJ that used to be extremely chatty, and he's not a DJ with us anymore. Yeah. So this goes to show.
Kinda, just kidding. He's got to kind of slide into it a little bit, folks. We have to slide into it a little bit. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, that's a long rambling. I'm trying.
It really is.
I do remember, this is not Disney related, when I used to do HSN, the first couple times at HSN, I would like be shaking doing it because I was nervous. Mm-hmm. And then now I don't. So I think that's just with anything. When it's brand new, you have those nervous energy, and then you manage it with preparation and with experience.
The first time I did a Raptors game, it was a preseason game when they were in Tampa, and I was doing the public address announcer. They did not give me a roster, so I had to literally look up a roster on my phone for the two teams, and I'm trying to manage that. My level of nervousness with that is as high as it's ever been, but I will tell you, because that was sort of a train wreck, after that, I kind of eased into the rest of the season. When you sometimes the nervousness... there's a positive, because it's really about, just like a race, you're working through a hard space. That's the difficult space. You're really, really nervous, but you have to go and do this. So you've got to get through that nervousness. And it's, you know, again, but 20 years down the line, we've got it down. There are never any problems.
Never any mistakes.
And I've doomed us for spring.
Well, this comes out after springtime, so you guys let us know. But thank you for the question. This one came from Instagram to our 321GO podcast IG account from Chiquita 19722. If you have a question about race announcing, about anything, we'd love to answer it. Or if you want to share your personal story, we would love to share that as well. Or if it's a charity that you're running for and you're supporting and you want to maybe bring awareness to, we're happy to do that in this section too. Email us 321gopodcast@gmail.com. And that's all we got for today. But a huge thank you to Bex. What an amazing woman. I could have talked to her for hours. We had so much more to say. She does so many great things. So thank you to Bex. And thank you guys for listening. See you later.